signed one of the year's most in-demand theatrical tickets. David Tennant is one of the few actors to move easily between leading parts on screen, including Broadchurch, Doctor Who and The Politician's Husband, and the main Shakespearean roles such as Benedick in Much Ado About Nothing and Hamlet. Now Tennant has joined up again with the man who staged his Hamlet, Gregory Doran, Artistic Director of the Royal Shakespeare Company, to play the title part in Richard II, as the king who makes a series of mistakes that open up the throne to his rival Bolingbroke. The production is currently in rehearsal.
The cue is Bolingbroke's fair day, and to Bolingbroke in his fair day.
Here we go. He does me double wrong that wounds me with the flatteries of his tongue. Discharge my followers, let them hence away. From Richard's night, to Bolingbroke's fair day.
David Tennant and Gregory Doran in rehearsal for Richard II. During their lunch break, I mentioned that there's an interview on the RSC website in which Doran says that Tennant arrives for rehearsal having done all the work and learned all the lines. So what does the actor actually do in the rehearsal room?
I wish that were true. I suppose actually the sooner you know the lines, the better, I think, because it allows you to play with it, which I think is particularly with classical text. It's about kind of... it's about wrestling them into your own kind of soul, really. It's about finding a way that those words feel like they come from you, and which is partly through repetition, partly through investigation, and partly through experimentation in the rehearsal room, I think.
And Greg, obviously you've done a lot of work in beforehand as well, but how often in a rehearsal room do you think, my God, I've never understood that scene or even that line until that moment?
Very frequently. I do an experiment, a little piece of work whereby we take the text around the table and nobody speaks their own lines for the first however long it is. And then we put it into our own words and somebody will say something which will explain a line, which I'd never thought of it in that way before. And it also means that people kind of invest in the production because their contribution is not just a kind of paraphrasing, but a collective understanding of the whole play.
David, I was lucky enough to watch some rehearsal of Act 3, Scene 2, when Richard loses his power. And one of the actors, when you were talking about it with Greg, said, the improvisation we did, that really helped. So what was the improvisation?
We just ran through the scene without staging it, where we kind of used what we could find in the rehearsal room to kind of physicalise what we were talking about, using other company members and indeed chairs and prop swords and whatever else that felt appropriate within the moment. Again, just a way of unlocking the words, really.
It's a great moment when you sort of built a defensive ring of plastic chairs around you.
That's how I feel. With 2 weeks to go before we go on stage, that's what I'd like to, how I'd like to spend my life.
Greg, on the script being used in the rehearsal room, it says Richard II by William Shakespeare, Greg Doran rehearsal edit. Which I think is rather magnificent. So Michael Grandage, as you probably know, I mean, he's the other way round. I mean, when I first started going to Shakespeare, it was part of the full text movement where productions would last 4.5 hours and you got every single line of every available extant text of Shakespeare. We're going the other direction now, I think, aren't we? We're cutting and making it swifter.
I think that there's no such thing as a definitive production. And there are times when I think you just should let the play work. But I begin by going in and seeing if there are things that I might fill it out or might just make it move on a bit more swiftly at certain points.
And Michael Grandage and Nicholas Heitner have both admitted that if they think a word is difficult from an audience, they simply rewrite it. Do you do the same?
No, actually. No, I don't. When I was at school, I remember seeing a production of Macbeth that toured to our school, and Lady Macbeth came out with a line, instead of saying, "Let no compunctious visitings of nature shake my fell purpose," she said, "Let no horrid visitings of nature shake my fell purpose." And I felt affronted as a 14-year-old schoolboy. I know I'm a nerd.
he may have been an unusual 14-year-old schoolboy.
But compunctious. I might not precisely understand what compunctious means, but it means a hell of a lot more than horrid.
Yes. And maybe if they'd rewritten it slightly better.
Yeah. But I think there are, of course, there are times when, the currency of the language can be devalued if there are too many words you don't understand, maybe. On the other hand, they give a texture and a very specific texture to each particular play.
The thing that you don't need to change the words, the political meaning of this play, it seems to be astonishing. One of the things you did recently was The Politician's Husband, and politically the worlds are entirely recognisable. When Richard says three Judases, each one thrice worse than Judas, which politician anywhere in the world has not said a version of that at some point? This is a guy who starts a questionable war, who irritates the wealthy by taking their money away. The parallels are all there, aren't they?
Yes, and he thinks he's entirely justified and right to do all the things that he does because he's been put there by God. For God, read the electorate. You know, absolutely, he believes he has the ultimate power and should never be challenged. And I think that's something we can all recognise from the politics of today, yeah.
A lot of talk about new audiences at the moment, bringing them to Shakespeare, because in the West End we have people who've seen David Walliams on TV coming to see Shakespeare. It may well happen because of this David's own connection with a youth-oriented franchise in the past, Doctor Who. I assume you want that, but that's one of the challenges. People come in because of you, but they get Shakespeare.
Well, that's almost not for me to say. It's not something that I set out to proselytize about. It's, you know, if that happens, then great. And certainly with Hamlet, there was a lot of talk before we opened the show that there would be people sort of in some way spoiling it. That it's this weird kind of, that there is this differentiation between high art and low art, and that the two should never mix. The assumption within that, of course, being that something like Doctor Who is low art, which I would refute highly. But that never happened. It never happened in Hamlet once, and in Much Ado About Nothing. It was often quite uproarious, but that was led by the play. I mean, it wasn't like I popped out a blue door and Catherine take him on with a sonic screwdriver and the house roared. That's not... if people want to come and see you in something because they've been interested in your career because they've seen you in something else, then fine, we're all whores.
No, I wasn't suggesting it was a deliberate strategy or anything, but it's a consequence, isn't it? If you have actors such as David, Catherine Tate, David Walliams, who do a variety of things, it will happen.
Yeah, I think the audiences that came in for Hamlet, there was a sense that they would be, rustling their sweet papers once David was off the stage, but that never happened, so that must be evidence of that.
Doctor Who fans tend to be rather intelligent.
Yes, of course.
So if, you know, you don't have any worry about Doctor Who fans spoiling an audience.
We talk about getting new audiences part of that is, which now happens and will happen with this, the live broadcasts of the plays, cinemas around the world. But for actors have to make a decision because you do screen acting, you do stage acting.
Yeah.
And this is both. But presumably, in acting terms, you do it as a stage performance.
I've never done it, and I guess you do. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not without, some nervousness of it, but I think we just have to, it's worth a go.
Well, Greg, what would you say to the actors on that? Because it's an obvious question. Are they giving a stage or a screen performance?
Well, there's an audience in there. What I don't want it to be is a sort of second-hand experience of, oh, if only I was sitting in that theatre, that would be the first-hand experience. But it's something we've struggled with for years. We back at the Barbican, we filmed a production that we did of The Winter's Tale. And you had to solve the problem of how the camera was going in for a close-up on an actor who was still trying to hit the back of the Barbican stage, the theatre. And that's a conundrum, in a way.
It's the saliva conundrum, isn't it?
It's the saliva. It's the spit.
the trick about that is not to put backlight, because that's the only thing that makes you seal the spit.
I was struck watching rehearsal because the voice you're using for Richard II is not your, it's certainly an accent, is not your natural speaking voice. I was very struck by the ease with which you switch. So you would do a scene and then Greg would come in and you would discuss the scene with him in your natural everyday speaking voice, but it seemed I don't wish to make you self-conscious about it, but it seemed it just seemed to you go quite naturally from one to the other.
I've done it.
You're not a king, quite a lot.
It's just part of the game, I guess. And it's not an accent I have to particularly reach for, I suppose, because I've used it a lot. So I suppose there's that. Maybe if I was doing South African or something, I'd be slightly more worried about it.
And you're adjusting at the moment, Greg, to this being artistic director of the Royal Shakespeare Company and also directing your own plays. There are many books of diaries by Peter Hall and Richard Eyre about the difficulty of this division. And some people said the difficulty is you're trying to concentrate on Shakespeare and someone comes in and says they haven't paid the electricity bill and an actor has lost his voice in Stratford and you've got to deal with all that. Is it a difficult adjustment to be in charge of all of that?
Well, I've had a bit of time to adjust to being artistic director by itself, as it were. And what I've got is a fantastic team. And every day there is something that has to be dealt with or has gone wrong, or as you say. But no, as long as you can teach yourself to focus when you're there, that seems to work so far.
And really easy one to finish, David. Are you in Broadchurch Series 2?
You'd think it was easy, but I have no idea. You need to ask Chris Chibnall. He's writing it as we speak.
Are you available if he is writing it for you?
I will see what I can do. If it was the first series, I very much enjoyed, so I'd like to be involved in series 2.
Just a second, it's going to run and run.
And were you told that you couldn't nip down to Paddy Power and put a bet on who'd done it?
No, we weren't. Nobody said that. And I
didn't think you'd do that.
I thought
that's why
of
you're looking so prosperous.
I thought of it, and I had friends who've strong armed me. I think the idea that it might get traced back to you would play so badly, but I think you realise that you have to be quite careful.
David Tennant and Gregory Doran. Richard II runs from 10th of October to the 16th of November in Stratford-on-Avon, and then at the Barbican in London from the 9th of December to 25th of January next year. The production will be broadcast live to cinemas in the UK and around the world on the 13th of November this year. This and previous editions of Front Row are available as download through the BBC Radio 4 website.